November the 15th. Joining us this morning is the general manager of the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District, Humboldt Water District, Mr. Hilliker. How you doing, Paul?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Oh, really?
And you?
Oh, breathless. couldn't wait to be able to talk to you today.
I know how you feel.
Yeah, okay. Oh, boy. Our quote this morning comes from David Searles. The tendency of an event to occur varies inversely with one's preparation for it. Really?
Don't you
think? Found that to be the case with your board meetings?
We're always well prepared for that.
I bet you,
are. The weather is not something that you can always prepare for.
Speaking of which, we have kind of had a little bit of a drought-negating period of time here. If you talk to the regular guy on the street, or you look at the runoff, you look at the creeks, you look at the rivers, you look at all these empirical references, everything's okay. Is it?
Well, I'd say here we are pretty okay. I was just looking at the numbers this morning and pulled this off of the National Weather Service website. Since October 1st, we have had 12.24 inches of rain in Eureka, which is 285% of normal. So I think for those people who didn't realize that it's rained a lot, now they know.
Brookings in the month of October had 30 inches.
Wow.
We got lots of water here, but does it matter where here is, considering where the power base is, might not necessarily be quite so damp?
Well, that's the dilemma that we faced in the past couple of years, is the change in precipitation hasn't really affected the whole state. In fact, what you're looking at here is the drought monitor. For those who follow water issues, they know this well. It's the big red blob that shows over most of the middle part of California. The good news, though, is that the major reservoirs that serve most of the state, especially the municipal customers in the state, are located up on the north end of the state, where we don't have any drought conditions anymore. For the first time in a few years, we're drought-free.
Now, there was some references early on, snowpack. It's snowpack, 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 snowpack. Is it too early to determine what this year is going to be like and whether or not snowpack is going to be there for us?
Snowpack is something that they don't even really start monitoring until December. If you go onto the Department of Water Resources website, they have the little curve chart that shows how deep the snow is, and it doesn't start until December. So
it's not there yet, or they just don't care if it's there?
It snowed in October.
That's what I heard. Yeah. There were a couple times that the snow level was down to 6,000.
Yeah, there were times when you had to have chains going over the Sierra.
Over 80?
In October, yeah.
Oh, good. A little brisky.
Yeah. It's supposed to snow this week, too. I was talking to one of the people this morning about the rainstorm coming in tomorrow and Wednesday, Tuesday. Today and Wednesday. And so it's...
You'll get it right eventually.
And it's supposed to have a little bit of snow up at Ruth.
Really?
Yeah.
Even at Ruth?
Even at Ruth.
What's the elevation there?
2,600 feet, but on the hills up above Ruth.
Okay, so 3,000.
Yeah,
4,000. Certainly under 4,000.
Yeah. Yeah, it's supposed to cool down quite a bit.
That is cool. Somehow that is...
Yeah.
You like that cool reference?
Absolutely.
That's cool. Okay. Could be frigid, too. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19. We'll be back with more from Paul Hilliker.
You've never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Paul Hilliker. Paul, the concept of water, I think we've talked about it over the over the years, I see water as being not the green economy and not the gold economy, but the future economy for our area. Is it possible that that could play out, or because we're within the state of California, what's yours is mine and what's mine is mine when it comes to water for the folks down south?
I think throughout the state, there's a water right program that pretty much governs what water belongs to whom. It's admittedly, it's a water right regime that can be affected by court decisions and by determinations from different agencies with respect to endangered species and things like that. But I think the bottom line is that we do have water up here. We have rights to it. And we're working on multiple ways to be able to make sure that we continue to use that up here. There are possibilities to look at maybe selling it to other parts of the state that need it, since we do have quite a bit up here. But that would only be if we were able to make some money off of it.
Now, with the decision made last week about marijuana, and within the county of all the various codes and permits and all that kind of hullabaloo, what do you guys see as the outcome of this? Will the permits and the legal pulls of the water help to compensate for what is going on or isn't going on out on the North Spit with the old pulp mills? Is it going to give you some compensation to be able to take care of things? Do you get zero and we're just now able to more accurately monitor what's going on? Where are we with all this stuff that the county's doing cartwheels about?
I think the biggest impact we've seen over the past few years has been on the upstream tributaries, where you have people that grow plants up on the hillsides and they use the water not just during the winter but also during the summer. And when that happens, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has identified particular streams that have been dried up because of the diversions. And that's the thing that I think is most of concern. And my expectation is that when we have a full-fledged permitting program in place and Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Regional Water Board and the State Water Board have enough staff to go out there and check, then we'll see people starting to come into compliance. Now, one thing, interestingly enough, the Department of Fish and Wildlife did an aerial survey a couple years ago of the Mad River and showed where there were big grows, and they identified how much water might be used. And it's not really a large amount for the main stem of the river, but for the side channels and the tributaries, it can have an impact.
You're a water guy. You've been a water guy for a long time. What happened? I'm not asking this totally facetiously, but I've asked it a couple times, and everybody kind of has a deer in the headlight response. So that's what my expectation level is. 10, 15 years ago, it was all about the fishy in the river. It was the salmon. It was the steelhead. It was the minimum flows. It was letting the water out of the lakes. We had the Indians' rights. We had this. Okay, and then once the illegal marijuana pull started, all of a sudden we forgot about the fish, the minimum flows in the eel, the minimum flows in the mad. And was it just kind of the moment for the fish, and now it's on to another's moment? Were the standards changed so that there's not that requirement anymore? Was it too costly, too complicated, too expensive to go after some of these folks and keep the water in place? You know, when the salmon come up and they're trying to go home again and there's no river there, they can't hitchhike. What happened?
Well, I wasn't here 15 years ago. But
yeah, okay. Well, go back in Carol's notes.
I will. But I was here in California, and 15 years ago, salmon was just coming to the fore when it comes to being designated as an endangered species. And so our water district did something that was kind of cutting edge. We did a habitat conservation plan because we wanted to make sure that our operations didn't affect the species. And we found that generally they don't, but there can be times when, especially when we were running the pulp mills and we diverted the water directly out of the river, there were times when the screens didn't operate as well as they should have, and we had an impact on some of the fish swimming by. I think, though, that as we've seen over the past few years that the amount of water that's being taken upstream has become a big issue. And that's, if you read about everything that the researchers are doing at the Department of Fish and Wildlife, that's what they're focused on, is what kind of impact are we having on the spawning beds and on the amount of water that's available to keep the salmon healthy during the summertime.
Well, and you're not even dealing with the Eel River watershed, which really gets hammered far more significantly than what the MAD does.
Yeah, if you look at a map of Humboldt County where the highest density of grows are, it's in southern Humboldt. And that's definitely...
You tell that when you walk across the river.
Yeah.
it just is goofy. So what is your board telling you to do or not to do in association with code enforcement? Are you guys going to have a code enforcement branch, or are you just going to default to the feds or the states or the county as far as who's legal and who's not?
We don't have the direct authority to be able to enforce any codes. It's a water right issue, and it's also a water quality issue, and both of those are directly the responsibility of the water boards and the Department of Fish and Wildlife. So that's why we're working closely with them. And I mentioned their survey that they did a couple of years ago. We just recently helped to fund the Department of Fish and Wildlife to update that survey, and the Regional Water Board as well. So they'll take that information, and they have a program now at the Regional Water Board that says that landowners have to meet these standards, and if they don't, they're going to get an enforcement letter and then go to jail possibly.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30. We'll be back with more from Paul Hellinger.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Paul Hellinger from the Humboldt Municipal Water District. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by REDEC. Paul, with the drought situation as it is, whether it's on your phone and the cute little map, whether it's something a little bit more elaborate than that, what is the governor saying? Is he saying we got to maintain? Is he saying we have to maintain our drought infrastructure? Is he saying, things are cyclical, and now it's wet, and now it's dry, and it looks like it's going to be wet again? What's going on?
Well, when I was here last fall, we were talking about the conservation regulation mandates that we all had to deal with. And at that point, we didn't really know what the winter was going to be like. But we did have a pretty good year last year. In fact, I have my handy-dandy chart here for you that shows where we were.
Color, too.
Yes. So last year, we were 125% of normal rainfall in the Sacramento Valley. And here on the Mad River, we were up higher than that, 150% of normal. So we did have a good year, and because of that, the governor said, okay, well, we don't necessarily have to have these mandates for everybody around the state, and we'll let water agencies take a look at what their water supplies are, and then they'll come back and tell us if they have enough, if you've got three more dry years. So we all did that in the springtime, and 80% of the water agencies in the state, primarily because they rely on reservoirs up in the Sacramento Valley, said we got enough water. So that was in May, and then now we're looking at what happens this winter, and the governor has asked the state water board to come back to him in January with a plan in case we do have dry conditions.
A part of the trick was referred to as capturing units. There are no reservoirs down there. So when they do get rain, it runs off very nicely, thank you.
Ah, yes.
Rather than being able to be captured or diverted into aquifers or some of those different holding facilities, natural or man-made. So even if we got rain, it really wouldn't matter a hill of beans because they can't hold on to it. Or they have things like mudslides, and it all ends up, you know, heading towards the ocean. Is there any movement, any thought that that's going to be changing in the next little bit, that we're going to look to infrastructure development?
Yeah, part of Prop 1, which passed in 2014, included a big chunk of money for stormwater management and stormwater recharge into groundwater. And so those dollars are going out, and there are a number of programs that are happening, again, mostly in Southern California, where they do have very good aquifers. They have sandy riverbeds, and they just have to put up a dam and hold back that water, and it'll percolate down into the groundwater. The other thing they're doing down there is ramping up their water recycling programs and taking the water from the wastewater plant and treating it to a high level, sometimes even cleaner than what's in the groundwater, and then taking that up and replenishing the groundwater with that. So I think it's something, and because of the fact that that drought monitor shows that Southern California still is pretty dry, they're spending a lot of money on all these alternatives.
It's starting to connect for them.
Yeah, so well, in Los Angeles, over the past 20 years, they've grown in population by a couple million people in the whole Southern California area. And city of Los Angeles, I think it's been close to a million, but their water use is no higher than it was in the 70s.
Isn't that frightening that they're growing that quickly? And we're coin a phrase, treading water.
Well, we're growing about 1% a year up there. Yeah.
So somewhere in about 300 years, we need to worry about some infrastructure.
Well, we do have a lot of water. Who knows what's going to happen with the recreational marijuana industry?
I know. Isn't that the elephant in the middle of the room? Now, when marijuana growth does expand, whether it's DOJ or whether it's just through the state and within the state of California, what about the concept of managing water, managing agricultural products, managing, as we heard for years, rice paddies. Oh, you got to get rid of the, and then they went on to, got to get rid of alfalfa. It takes up too much water. Are we ever going to get to that point? Is there any kind of early discussion that there's going to be product management as part of the water plan for the state of California?
I don't know that we're going to have to get into the Soviet-style five-year planning effort of you grow this, doesn't really matter what people want, you grow that. And if you look at the agricultural market in California and actually globally, agriculture has been growing higher and higher value crops. You hear all the debate about almonds. Well, almonds are a very valuable crop. They've changed the water picture because you can't just stop watering trees if you don't have enough water in any particular year, whereas you didn't have to grow tomatoes or didn't have to grow cotton, which were the bigger crops earlier. But I think what we'll see is a slow evolution towards more water being dedicated to municipal uses as the cities grow and less to agricultural use. But there's a lot of water that's being used by agriculture.
Hydroponics, more than viable now?
In certain places, that doesn't necessarily take any more water than growing them outdoors, but it's possible.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:43. We'll be back with more from Paul Heliker.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Paul Heliker. Paul, what does the future look like? If we could boil all this thing down, pull away all the crusties on the side, what does it look like? More regulation, less regulation, we're doing okay, we're going to have the water police. What are we looking at?
We're okay here. We have lots of water. We actually like to make use of more water in our area because we do have the water that was available when the pulp mills were here. I think if you're looking at the trends, what we're going to see as the climate changes, it's going to definitely get warmer. Not really sure what's going to happen with precipitation, but as California warms, we're going to see more demand for water just by plants themselves, but also throughout the state. And so we're going to need to deal with that. At the same time, we have groundwater, especially in the San Joaquin Valley and the Tulare Basin, that has dropped precipitously, partly as a result of the last 5 years of drought. But that's got to be dealt with because of the new state law.
So if there were 5 years of abundance, would it fill up, or because of the infrastructures connected into those aquifers and the water being pulled out, is it going to take 10 or 15 or 20 years of regular to backfill in there?
I think it's going to take more than that, frankly, that we've been depleting that groundwater now for 40 years. And so it's
not just the drought's fault.
No. It's nothing because of the drought. If you can look at the curve, and there have been wet years in that period of time. 97 was a wet year. 2011 was a wet year. 1983. But even given those bumps up, the groundwater levels are declining because so much is being pumped out to produce all of the great crops that we produce in California. And so I think we're going to have to deal with that over the long term. And by 2040, those groundwater basins are supposed to be in balance, according to the new state law. By 2020, there has to be a plan. So I think all of those factors are conspiring to show that we'll probably see a transition away from as much agriculture as we have, and probably more efficient use in the municipalities. The Public Policy Institute in California came out with a study a year ago that said, what happens if we now have 2014, 2015 weather conditions as the ongoing condition? What's that going to mean for California? And they found that...
I know.
What?
Move to Humboldt and Del Norte County. We got water.
Could be.
What'd they find?
You know, a lot of people are talking about moving to Canada now. There's a lot of water up there. But what the PPIC found was that in general, California's economy is not going to tank. We'll still be able to accommodate all the people that live here and more. But what we probably will see is that maybe 10 to 15% of our agricultural land will go out of production.
Yeah, it's like, let's just play the music. I can't do anything more than you. Well, that is so perfectly. Is there a place to go if folks are interested in this kind of documentation and dialogue to go? Is the State Water Board, are they the source for a lot of this stuff so that people can see as actions are taken or considered?
Well, if people want just a basic overview of California water, one of the organizations that I think is the best in the West is the Water Education Foundation. So if people just go Google their website, they can get to some really good basic information about water supplies in California. If you want to get into more detail, yeah, the State Water Resources Control Board and the Department of Water Resources both have a wealth of information about water supplies, water quality, and you can pinpoint any particular watershed you want to look at and actually get the latest real-time information.
Thanks for coming by.
Great to see you.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be able to get through this drought stuff and get into like normal talk, like economic development and things of that nature. We've been Talking Shop this morning with Paul Hellicker. Join us tomorrow morning for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out making a good day. Hug someone you love. See you then.